Veterans Affairs, Ev Wright, and Pam Barrows. Welcome to committee.
For the record, my name is Ev Wright. I'm Facilities Program Director for the Minnesota Department of Veterans Affairs. With me today is Pamela Barrows, the Senior Director for Healthcare on the Veterans Homes side of our agency. You have my handout in front of you. It identifies the bonding receipts for the last 4 years for our agency. And the dollars that are allotted, the dollar status, and I want to call to your attention the federal reimbursement, where you see the 65% percentage. That is projects that we've received official notice from the feds that we'll be receiving.
If it says 65%, you have actually received it already.
No, that we will receive when the project is completed. That's the understanding there. So the report is in front of you. I guess what I should probably say first, for the record, the Minnesota Veterans Homes consists of buildings from 1887, of course, with our Minneapolis site, several buildings on that site, and the newest building was built in 1998, and we have 54 total buildings in our agency. I would entertain any questions that you might have
Now you're just referencing this.
Referencing
okay.
That
so
handle.
If you've had a chance to any questions, allotted status, and Representative Drunke, you've probably seen this already in your committee. I don't know if you
Madam Chair, I haven't seen it in my committee, but I saw it in my office the other day.
Okay.
Along with the Deputy Commissioner and others. So, Madam Chair, we did go through it, and he's right, you know, and just for folks' information, some of the veterans projects qualify for basically a two-thirds federal reimbursement. Those are the ones you see the 65% by. Basically, those are care buildings. The others, where you don't see it, is, you know, again, maintenance and improvement or safety improvements or other things that we've just done on our own. So that's what you're seeing there. And that's the bulk of it. The biggest one, obviously, is the Minneapolis building that we appropriated money for. You see that building 9. The demolition is occurring right now, I believe, and the reconstruction then will be, the bids will be let, and eventually the feds have to appropriate the money. Though what happens with veterans buildings, again, just to give you a little brief background, is you need to get on the federal approval list. They have to give you initial approval for a building, and then you languish way down on the list. So this building here, Building 9, was probably approved, or other buildings were approved some time back. They get on the list. Once we make our state commitment, then it rapidly moves as a priority project to the feds, but we're still caught in a federal appropriation cycle, and timing is everything, so it really depends on, you know, they're taking requests now in March for their budgets in September, and you know how appropriations go at the Fed. So sometimes, even though you get it, it might be a year or two before you get the money. But so that's what you're seeing reflected here. And last year, if the committee remembers, we had a couple facilities that were approved, a number of them approved, including Wilmer in the House, and Minneapolis was not approved, but ended up in the bill at the end, and that's another story. But we also did a lot of safety upgrades and those types of things, which again will be a priority for us as we move forward too. We want to make sure we do health and safety type things first, and we always look at that in all the homes. So.
And remind me, did we add study language to the bill?
And I don't know if it was in your bill or my bill, but there was study language, and that has been, we asked for a department to do a study to understand the medical needs and future housing and bricks and mortar type needs for veterans facilities in the state of Minnesota. So in the future, we can have at least that as one of the tools we use, just like we're trying to do with the shooting ranges and everything else. The department just let that bid, I believe, 2 weeks ago. And it's slated to be done May 1st. So You know, we won't necessarily have it for use a whole lot this year, but certainly as we move into our bonding cycle again, our major one, when we're touring this summer and fall and seeing these homes, we should have an idea, because we're getting requests from all over the state for veterans homes, and it's just not that easy. You know, people think that you can just, you know, if David wants one in Harmony, he'll put in a bill and we'll have a veterans home. Well, it's not quite that easy, but a lot of our members think it is. And so we're doing all we can to help facilitate some rationale and reasoning behind why we do what we do and where we're going to do it.
There are three new people, I think, on the committee who are here. And I think the two things that I should just mention for new people, when we toured last year, there was lots of discussion within the committee, and some of that came out of recommendations from Representative Junkie's committee. We never opposed the Minneapolis Center, but we thought before we put a lot of more money into an old historic campus that has huge capital needs, that we should step back for a minute and say, are we at a point where decentralizing veterans care across the state or across the region is a more appropriate way? There are some veterans that expressed this desire to, in fact, have the option to be in the nursing home in their community and to go to the doctor in their down the street instead of getting on a van and riding all day. And so we had thought just stopping for a year and taking a look at that question was appropriate. And then as we toured, when we toured in Willmar, with one of those presentations that just stays with you, that one of the best presentations, I think, on our tours, by a physician who talked about the veteran of today and the increasing head injuries and brain injuries, and this belief that we really should to provide the kind of care for veterans that they deserve, to diagnose what is the issue and how can we bring this person to full functioning in life again. That is an obligation we ought to have, to say what is the diagnosis here and what is the path to full recovery.
And Madam Chair, just to follow up, there was another study also put in our bill last year, the veterans bill, an ag bill, that asked for get together for that Minneapolis home. That has not been accomplished yet. There's been one preliminary meeting, but I know there's another meeting or two that needs to be scheduled, which basically brings stakeholders in. Department of Veterans Affairs was the hospital, the veterans homes people certainly, veterans groups, but also local legislators, the city of Minneapolis, and others, Hennepin County, who are involved with that site. Because as you said, and members will quickly realize, we're going to have multiple million-dollar requests for that site for many, many years to come, because they are old historic buildings. Not to say we don't want to do that. Representative Howes has been involved with old historic buildings at Snelling for years. The usable buildings aren't like that, we have some quarter buildings and other things out there that are not being used, that frankly are sitting there in disrepair, and eventually we're going to have to decide what to do with those too. So there's a whole campus plan that probably needs to be done. And you're right, for members' edification, and then I'll chime down and you can certainly ask questions of the people here. What we're trying to do in Minnesota Veterans Affairs is figure out a way we can treat and serve veterans in every county of the state. You know, someone from Willmar or Harmony or any other town in the state shouldn't have to necessarily drive to Minneapolis or St. Cloud or Sioux Falls to get that treatment. We should be able to get that for a veteran within the county, which is what they want to do. Similarly to the nursing home or the veterans homes we're talking about, we're seeing actually nursing homes in rural areas and in the Twin Cities probably that are emptying out now, that they're getting boarded up or there's a lot of empty rooms. The reason is we have different ways of delivering those services now. People don't necessarily want to be in nursing homes. And so we're trying to discover through this study that's coming, as well as into the future, Maybe we should be addressing it by doing more adult daycare in counties for veterans specific. Or maybe we should have smaller community group homes at a four or a sixplex that would house veterans that would fit better in a rural setting, but again, still have the veterans care. And we're trying to discover how can you deliver mental health services and everything else county by county in the state. And so we do want to be careful when we do some of these projects that they're fitting that new design and that new vision that we have for veterans care around the state.
So to this, what we see is the list, what's been allotted, the status of it. If I looked at this, you have sufficient bonding dollars to complete all of what we see here, or yes. Is there any part of the list that would still require additional funding?
Yes, Chairman, to answer that question, excuse me, yes, we do have sufficient dollars, that's dollars that we have initiated for these projects. We have always carried a list by priority of our upcoming project requests, We do, you know, intend on, you know, for sure the capital bonding package next year. We'd have a prioritized list for you.
And as I recall,
projects that we've initiated with the funding.
And as I recall, we didn't fully fund your asset preservation last year.
And no, we didn't.
That would be helpful for us just to see what we didn't fund last
year. Fund.
That would be a helpful number to get.
Yeah, we can provide that.
Okay, and then your
Pam is going to present that part of it.
Welcome to the committee.
Thank you.
Barrow.
Thank you, Madam Chair. For the record, Pam Barrows, I'm Senior Director for the Department of Veterans Affairs. And what you have before you, even though it's not a bonding year, we were asked to submit what we would put in for bonding if that became available. And the first one is the roof replacement for the Hastings facility. That campus is, or those buildings are over 30 years old. And Hastings is a 200 bed domiciliary. They've done a lot of patchwork on the roof, but do need $350,000 to replace that roof. The second one is the Minneapolis Building 4 and talking about adult daycare. I think back in 2005, and that would be on your previous list, the state put in their portion of the 35% for adult daycare to renovate Building 4, which is a historic building on the Minneapolis campus. And that's finally made it through the list for the 65%, so we're moving forward on that. But because it was so long ago, the amount of money is to do some of these things, the HVAC replacement and the foundation repair, to be able to move forward with that project. So that's another $600,000 that we're requesting. And then finally, we have been we're being asked to become Medicare certified by the House and Senate, and that's currently a bill that is currently in the system. And because of some of these old buildings, we don't know if we're going to comply with the life safety issues, and that cost analysis has not been done. So we don't have a dollar figure, but that might be an issue to meet that certification requirement for some of those life safety issues.
Do you have a timeline? On that timeline, by
well, we're, Madam Chair, we're doing the, we're starting that bidding process for an analysis, a fiscal and feasibility study, which would include what we would need for our buildings to comply. I would say that would not be done probably before the end of session.
And first of all, I think your request is good. We should see a list and send it to my office too of all the projects that were approved. And at that point, it was basically by the old Veterans Home Board and carried forward by Veterans Affairs. All those approved projects that did not, that are still sitting there, that did not get funded. And most of the major projects did, other than Wilmer. But the I thought you might want to, and the committee that visited, if you remember, we were at Hastings. And Representative Dean and I and others were calculating how we didn't think that was a very efficient project per square foot or per room. But anyway, they were able to do that project without bonding, and I think, Mr. Wright, you should update the committee on how we accomplished that project after it was a bonding request, and I believe that's moving forward and has come off your list of recommended projects. Why?
Yes, it has come off our list. In the language that was approved for design some years back, we had language in there that we should dialogue with Minnesota Housing Finance in that construction of that project. So when we were denied in the House and Senate here, we approached Minnesota Housing Finance and we made application through the 501c3 grant process, and we were successful. So we do have a project. We're finalizing our design, and midsummer we should be under construction for that 60-bed, what we call supportive housing. It's kind of like an assisted living. It's across the street from our building 23, our main building at Hastings campus, and with supportive services that with the nurses and staff in building 23, we can help. Excuse me, house veterans and others in that 60 unit so that we can provide them kind of like a halfway house and a safe housing once we're done with our domiciliary programming and they're ready to transition out of the facility. They can move across the street. We can support them with services. It's going to be a wonderful program. And there again, it kind of fits that model that we're intending on moving toward.
Right. Like, Madam Chair, I also want to bring it up. This was one of those projects that at the time did not qualify for the 65%. We were hesitant to do it, as was the Senate, for, I think, legitimate reasons.
Exactly.
But to understand, there are other ways to do these projects that don't always have to come through bonding committee. I think it was a good educational thing for me, and I suspect now for the committee, but we should always be looking at that as we tour, too. Are there alternatives out there and different ways we can do things rather than just standard bonding projects? And this was one of those that fit in.
Absolutely. Thank you.
Representative Colbert.
Mr. Wright. Mr. Wright, in the budget that you have and the governor have recommended to the legislature, you are carrying or requesting $2.5 million to be used for repairs and betterment projects at the five state-run homes. Why is that not part of a bonding request instead of a general obligation or general fund request?
By definition, repair and betterment is for the interiors of buildings. Thus, you know, you compare that with asset preservation. By state definition, asset preservation is exterior envelope and major HVAC and roads, or not roads, parking lots, those type of things. It does not include interiors of buildings, the carpeting, interior remodel, program adjustments or changes, those kind of projects. So we ask for the R&D, which is under operational budget, to help with those repairs on the interiors.
So I guess I need some clarification on that. My staff can probably help us on that.
Ms. Dyson?
And if they can't do it now, it's at some point.
At some point. Repair and betterment is the phrase.
Versus asset preservation.
Madam Chair and Representative Solberg, I'll go look at the statute and what their request is and get a memo to you.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you. Representative Carlson.
Yeah, Madam Chair, I have a different question, but carpeting, as I understand it, could not bond for, but a certain other interior thing,
sure.
I think we have historically, as long as it was a permanent remodeling kind of thing, but we'll wait for feedback. The question that I had, and I apologize for being a little late. Representative Holbrook and I were at a meeting dealing with the federal stimulus, so that's on my mind and why we came in late. But do you qualify for any of the federal stimulus dollars? With our overview, we didn't happen to have a discussion on veterans facilities at that point.
Madam Chair, Representative McGarrett, We're looking at that. They are, the last I've seen, there's another $150 million in the state home grants program. So that could include more on that list, and how much farther that will go down, we're not sure. But there's a possibility that could happen.
And then the question to ask would be, would that just be considered the 65%, or might they be doing 100% as they are with some of the other federal stimulus programs?
Madam Chair, I would suspect that that would be just the 65%.
Mm-hmm. Representative Carlson, follow-up?
Yeah, Madam Chair, yeah. We learned today, and we learned last Monday when we had a Senate hearing, that there's a lot of work being done on the whole federal stimulus package. But if you could keep the chair here informed, and I'd be interested in getting any information you have on that question as well.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.
I don't think I see any further questions. Department of Military Affairs, Terrence Palmer. Welcome to the committee.
Madam Chair, committee members, staff, my name is Terry Palmer. I'm the comptroller for the Department of Military Affairs. Thank you for inviting us to give you a little background about our 2008 and previous capital budget processes. We did not request anything in fiscal year for this 2009 capital budget year, but I guess by way of background, a little explanation about the department's buildings. We have 63 armories that are located around the state, and those armories are used for the routine training and administration to those soldiers that belong to those units in those localities. They also serve as the meeting place for the family support groups when those service members are deployed overseas. They also use the units store a lot of their equipment, and that's also where the soldiers would muster if they were called to state active duty by the governor for an emergency. It's often where people have their first experience or contact with the military, and they also serve as shelters in emergency weather conditions, which I'm guessing some of them might be used today with the snowfall. But, so they are used widely by the military, but they're also available for the communities to use when those needs arise. As you can see, what we've included was our asset preservation ADA life safety budget request for 2008. We asked for $7 million in asset preservation, $1 million in Americans with Disabilities Act funding, and then $1.5 million in life safety. And I'm going through the handout, there's a PowerPoint, I think, in the members' book. The governor recommended $5.5 million in asset preservation and $1 million for ADA and $1.5 million for life safety. And when the final bill was done, we received $3.5 million for asset preservation, $1 million in ADA, and $1.5 million in life safety. In our case, asset preservation is used to reduce what we have a rather considerable backlog of maintenance. It's currently over $20 million at the facilities. And we've spent most of our energy
Is that list available, that $20 million backlog?
There is that. We actually have a large book we can provide to the committee members. It's current as of last year, but we could provide that to you if you'd like, Madam Chair. It's by location, by project, and by capital budget year even. There's items in there, and be happy to bring those to you. Generally, what we've been trying to do is renew facilities through a batch process. And when we say a batch process, it's when they go in and try to fix all of the problems in the building at the same time. So if the building needs a new heating plant or new windows or new roof, they try to do it all at the same time because it's much more efficient to bid those projects like that. In our whole goal in doing those things is to take care of what we own. And once you hit a certain threshold in maintenance in a building, you have to bring it up to code anyway. So it is much more efficient to do it in that manner. And a little more background, there's 62 of those armories are owned by the department. The average age of the facilities is 43 years old. And 56% of our facilities are over 40 years old, so as you probably would understand, then a lot of them have outlived their useful life with respect to the systems within the building. The buildings are still structurally sound, but the interior items like electrical wiring and the heating plants and some of the ventilation systems are no longer adequate. And as we use these asset preservation dollars to remove that backlog, of course, each year more items get put back onto the list as we discover more deficiencies or we go through a cyclical repair of facilities. We are prepared to execute any appropriations that we might receive. As you'll see in the list on the next slide, in the 2006 capital budget appropriation, the majority of that money has been either encumbered or expended already. And in the 2008 capital appropriation, 81% of the asset preservation money has been either encumbered or expended. We've been a little less successful in ADA and light safety pieces. That money used to be spent about the same pace as the general asset preservation dollars were, because what we would do would package those items within the whole project too. But the federal government has changed some of the rules, so they're trying to make sure we can leverage the state dollars to the extent we can by and still be spending them appropriately. So we're a little behind in those two, but generally speaking, all of these projects have 50-50 federal match. It varies by a couple of percentage points either way, but it's generally in a 50-50 range once the whole project has been completed. In our 2008 asset preservation, we've already completed the Moorhead Batch project, which is an overhaul of the facility, and also the Sauk Center Batch project. The projects underway are at St. James, Fairmont, East St. Paul, Redwood Falls, and Northfield. Those are, again, batch projects where they're actually going in and renewing the buildings and bringing them up to code. There's some smaller projects in Olivia, New Ulm, Montevideo, and St. Cloud, and Bloomington where they're replacing windows or replacing roofs or fixing some of the ramps that are deteriorating. But 81% of that funding has been committed to date already. In terms of projects that we have on our list, we have one project that's already been designed at Hutchinson. It's another batch project. We would expect to need $900,000 in state money, and we would match that with $900,000 in federal money. It would be that 50-50 match. We also have some projects that were...
Is this federal money different from the larger building project in that if you get asset preservation this year, the federal money is available for asset preservation? Seems as though you can usually spend asset preservation more quickly.
Madam Chair, that's correct. The federal government, of course, uses an annual budget even for all the processes. So the last several facilities that we built were actually 100% federally funded. Those are those base realignment and closure facilities that were authorized in Cambridge and in Faribault. So there are no major construction projects on the federal side with state that need a state match. So all of the money that we received is either 100% federal for facilities at Camp Ripley, or it's what they call SRM, sustainment, renewal, and maintenance money on the federal side that we can use for armories if we match the money. But there's also three batch projects that could be completed. And generally, those are 50-50, and those would be at Winona, Hastings, and Red Wing. And we would get $2.25 million in federal money to complete those projects if we could get the state funding. They already, and as another highlight, Madam Chair, they already have the federal funding for that Hutchinson project, so that is definitely ready to go. We don't have to wait for funding from the federal government. There's been a lot of interest in the federal stimulus proposals, and the Department of Defense only had $50 million in construction for the Army National Guard and $50 million in construction for the Air National Guard, so we have not received any of that money. But through that SRM funding, we've been at least initially informed from National Guard that we're eligible for $5.9 million in federal funding. $4.6 million of that is 100% federal, and that's mostly energy improvements at Camp Ripley and a facility project with one of the logistical facilities, one of the maintenance repair shops for the Army National Guard. But they've also indicated that they would be willing to fund or provide a 75% share of a funding for armory projects that would provide backup heating and lighting. We discovered the last storm that we were concerned in some of the outstate locations that we would not have a way to keep the buildings warm if they were used for a shelter. We can bring generators and plug them into the walls and run the generators, but unless you have electric heating, it doesn't do any good because the boilers won't run if the power is cut off. So,
this is the first time I've actually seen what looks to be a state match requirement on some federal stimulus money. We've been sort of watching for that, but this is the first time we've ever seen some clear indication.
Madam Chair, I'm not aware of what's going on in the other agencies, but this is not unusual in our world because if the funding comes through the normal channels, there is that match requirement because the armories are actually state-owned buildings, so the federal government does require a state match for those.
Representative Solberg has a question.
Madam Chair and sir, as we were in the meeting just a couple of hours ago on the federal stimulus, one of the big parts of the federal stimulus is in energy, and part of that set aside for the energy is refitting buildings, energy conservation. And I noticed in your presentation that you're talking about energy conservation, new windows, new opportunities to save energy. Have you looked at and applying for those type of energy conservation grants that are in the federal stimulus package?
Madam Chair, Representative Solberg, the Department of Defense's funding was a little different, I think, than maybe some of that other money. These are actually specific bi-location projects that were approved. I think our list was about...
I understand the Department of Defense, but I think in the energy part itself, in the category energy, and part of that energy is energy efficiency. And I don't think there's very many guidelines that says it has to be in any other thing. You could be using it for these buildings as well. And I don't want you to lose that opportunity to at least investigate whether or not you can't use that money for this type of energy conservation program.
Madam Chair, Representative Solberg, I will definitely go back and check with our facilities people, but to the best of our understanding, we're not eligible for that funding, but we can check.
Thank you.
Representative Scott.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'm just curious as to what batch funding is, or what that is relating to.
Mr. Palmer.
Madam Chair, Representative, I think that's probably a term that we use in the Department of Military Affairs, and what they try to do is to attack a lot of the building deficiencies at one time, because a lot of costs for construction are by the amount of time and effort required to bring the equipment there and to hire the people and get them on board. So if we can combine a number of projects in one facility, or sometimes actually they'll do roofing if it's if there's three or four towns that are not too far apart, they'll batch those projects together too, and they'll actually get a better bid on some of those projects, and we can make our dollar stretch further. But that's generally what we mean by batch projects.
Representative Lanning.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Mr. Palmer, are there matching requirements on the part of local communities that when it comes to their local armory facilities?
Mr. Palmer?
Madam Chair, Representative Lanning. No, there isn't, but interestingly, at least as far back as I know, back to 1934, the communities are required to provide the property and to pay for 12.5% of the construction of the basic armory. And in exchange for that contribution, we, on the state side and the federal side, take care of the building then. But they do have an investment in the building. It's just not, there's no requirement for them to provide ongoing operational costs unless they use the building for some purpose.
Thank you, Madam Chair. So that's what I wanted to clarify, that they have to participate. There has to be a local match to begin with. And that's been consistent over the years, but when it comes to upgrading or asset preservation or the like, then there isn't a matching requirement. Is that, if I understand you correctly?
Madam Chair, Representative Lanning, that is true if the if the facility is completely owned by the state. And in some of the newer buildings, it's a little more complicated. Like in Rosemont, the city actually built with us. So at some point when we have to do some major work, we will ask them to participate in that work based on the percentage of square footage that's being taken care of by that work. So if a roof is replaced, we'll ask the community to pay there for that portion of the building that they actually own, I guess, for lack of a better term.
One last question. Of the 62 armories, can you, you may not have the information readily available, but how many of those were enhanced by the local community, where the community decided to pay some more to help build a facility in the first place and took more responsibility than just the basic requirement? Can you give an estimate on how many communities enhanced the facility?
If I had to give an estimate, Madam Chair, Representative Lanning, it would be about a third of the newer buildings are that way. Albert Lee, for instance, the community wanted a large hall for community events and to attract shows for trade shows and things, and they actually spent quite a bit of money enlarging the drill floor and air conditioning that. And I think probably the first buildings where that started were in Brooklyn Park and Bloomington, and those are over 20 years old already, so it's probably about a third of the buildings are that way.
Well, Madam Chair, it might be helpful for us to sort of take a fresh look at the matching requirement policies that we have here, especially if we have communities enhance the project, and what should be their ongoing matching requirement as a result of that.
Representative
Erdahl. Thank you, Madam Chair. I was just making sure Representative Murphy knew that I turned my assignment in. But
like gold star, I'd say gold star.
Thank you, thank you. Mr. Palmer, we're just wondering over here, what is the oldest armory that's used in Minnesota now, and how long has that been?
Mr. Palmer.
Madam Chair, that's a great question. I'm not positive. I have the list somewhere, but if I would guess, it's probably Stillwater, like 1912 or something like that, in that range. There might be one older, but it's 1910, 11, 12, someplace would be the first building that we currently own and have on the books anyway.
I see no further questions. Any final comments that you have?
No, Madam Chair. Thank you for the opportunity to testify.
Thank you very much. And we have the Historical Society, David Kelleher. Welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'm going to take a moment to get set up here. I brought some pictures.
I always thought someday you'd flash that picture up on the screen when I climbed up the scaffolding outside of the James J. Hill Mansion.
Madam Chair, I don't have a picture of you on the scaffolding, but I do actually have a picture of the scaffolding that you're going to. So everyone else can see what we're talking about in a second.
If you need help, I think there's a page that probably knows the...
Coming.
There it is.
All right, here we go. Madam Chair, members of the committee, I'm David Kelleher from the Minnesota Historical Society, and thank you for the opportunity to give you a brief overview of asset preservation and other capital budget projects. See if we can make the technology work here. There we go. By way of background, the Minnesota Historic Sites Network is a longtime state responsibility. It consists of over 100 buildings, many of which are over 100 years old. I think the number I have up here is a little bit inaccurate, but half are more than 75 years old. And it's a good reminder of the previous testifiers today and on previous meetings that the state is the holder of a number of historic structures and has a responsibility to take care of those structures. It's not just the Minnesota Historical Society that owns important historic buildings. We are an important part of our state's outdoor recreation system. We're part of our educational system. We have over 250,000 school children come to historic sites in the History Center each year on organized field trips, and many more with their families. And we're part of the economic development system because people come to visit historic sites and participate in the tourism economy because they want educational and authentic experiences. I'll take a very quick run through the previous two capital budget or three capital budget appropriations and let you know where we stand with those. The 2005 appropriation included funding for asset preservation, historic Fort Snelling, and county and local historic preservation grants. On the asset preservation funding, we have nearly completely spent those dollars down, about 97% have been spent, with a few remnants of each of the projects as we complete all the work on those. The Fort Snelling appropriation has been spent, and the grants appropriation has been spent as well. For 2006, you appropriated $3 million for asset preservation, just over $1 million for historic Fort Snelling, and $1 million for the county and local historic preservation grants. I would say that that is about 80% spent down. A lot of those projects are underway. The design is complete, and they will be bid this year, and construction will be completed soon. The Fort Snelling request in particular, about 60% of that has been spent, and the grant appropriation has been completely spent. For the 2008 appropriation, asset preservation, $4 million, those dollars have not been spent yet. The bids will go out for probably about two-thirds of those dollars this spring. We've spent the time since the end of the 2008 session on design work for those projects. And those will get underway, as I said, quickly. I'll come back to the Fort Snelling in a couple of minutes. The county and local preservation grants are about half awarded. The remainder will be awarded in a grant round this summer. The Oliver Kelly Farm project is underway, and we hope to be back in the 2010 session to bring you a construction request for that. The appropriation last year was for design, and we'll have the design work. It wasn't all of the design work, but a part of the design work. We'll be completing that this spring. And then the Heritage Trails appropriation, we expect to be doing some further work on that later this year. What I'll do is take you on a quick tour of a couple of our sites and show you the types of projects that we carry out for asset preservation. The 2005 appropriation included projects at Split Rock Lighthouse, the roof at the James J. Hill House, and at Fort Snelling. And as you can see, the James J. Hill House, it was a pretty complicated project. The roof needed to be redone. The Hill House was completed in 1891, and this was the original roof on the house. So I think we got our money's worth out of that roof, and it was quite a complex project. The roof was slate, and we were able to reuse a lot of the slate by having the workers who did that project take the slate down off of the roof and the brackets that held them up, and then see what they could replace and what needed to be replaced with new. One of the reasons that that project was complicated was James J. Hill, of course, owned the railroad that carried the coal, so he heated his house, all 40-some thousand square feet of it, and heated the whole house. So this house had what was called a hot roof, so the entire house was heated. And back when energy started getting scarce, we had a cold roof. In other words, we didn't heat every single part of it. So that meant there was a lot of freeze thaw going on through the house, and it needed some serious work. So that project is complete. Madam Chair, you referred to your tour. I'll just go back for a second. We had you up on the scaffolding that you can see there to have a close look at the underbelly of the Hill House roof, and you hopefully got a chance to see how complicated those projects are. Another asset preservation project that was completed with 2006 funding was at the Folsom House in Taylor's Falls. The Folsom House gives us a glimpse of early statehood history and the history of the St. Croix Valley. And
I sort of recall when we were there, the water was in fact running under the sidewalk.
Madam Chair, that's correct. The common theme for this project at the Folsom House was water damage throughout, and this picture shows the effects of water on the corners, but it's hard to see from this picture, but there's actually mold growing on the side of the house that needed to be taken care of. You were referring to the sidewalk, and I think a couple of weeks after you guys came to visit, there was a sinkhole that opened up, and a big rain caused mud to slide into the basement of the building. So those are the kinds of things that we have surprises with these older buildings. We don't know what we're getting ourselves into when we start these projects, but we have to do them. Another project from the 2006 Asset Preservation Appropriation was at Split Rock Lighthouse. Inside the lighthouse top, the evidence of the harsh weather from Lake Superior became evident after nearly 100 years, and the frames that surround the Fresnel lens, which is a rare thing, there are only a handful of those in the world. Water was starting to come in, the frames of the window were rusted. So what we had to do was take care of those things with special scaffolding. The paint needed to be removed, and we couldn't have the paint going all over the place on a public site, so we had to have that canopy around the top of the lighthouse, and we tried to finish that up before the heavy visitation season at the site. Another part of the Split Rock Lighthouse site is the lighthouse keeper's dwelling. They're an important part of the interpretive program where people can learn what life was like for the keepers. Our staff have our costumed interpreters and talk to our visitors about the isolation that they experienced. The lighthouse keeper's dwellings needed some restoration on the brick. There are three of them, and two of them are used for public access. And one of them is the site manager's residence, which provides some on-site security in that isolated location. So brick included the chimney and the side of the building, which needed help. A final example from the 2006 Asset Preservation Appropriation was the Comstock House up in Moorhead. And if you go out the back door of the Comstock House, you will see the ice house, and you may very well ask yourself, what's the point of an ice house? Why do we need that? And in fact, one former chair of this committee suggested that we might just tear it down and replace it with a pole barn, which sort of misses the point of, again, this is an important part of the interpretive program for this house. I think kids and adults probably don't necessarily know that ice didn't always come from an automatic freezer. So this is an important part of the program where we tell people what life was like in the late 19th century in a home. This was showing its age, and I think from this first picture, it's hard to tell, but on the three doors on the left side, they were leaning and probably about to cave in on that side. So we shored up on the back temporarily to make sure that it didn't fall in, and got some work done, and that's what it looks like after the completion of the project. The 2008 appropriation for asset preservation will include projects at the James J. Hill House, the exterior, and I believe you all came for a visit last year to see, again, the effects of weather on the outside of the building and some of the interior support beams that needed some examination further. So we'll be taking a look at that this year. The Jeffers Petroglyph Historic Site needs a really serious look at what's happening with the environment. We know that something is happening with the petroglyph. We don't quite know what is causing it and what the long-term impacts are. So we're taking a first look at that. We know that fewer of them are visible than there were 10 years ago. So that's another important one. For smelling restoration, again, I'll come back to that in a second, and there's some additional work at Split Rock Lighthouse on the exterior of the lighthouse and the fog building. And then finally, from last year's appropriation, we need to do some work on the sanitary system at the Mille Lacs Indian Museum in order to hook up to the regional sewer system, and we were ordered to do that. So that was on an emergency basis.
We were just trying to have a side conversation here, wondering if you'd qualify for PFA, because they just got a lot of federal money.
No.
Well, sanitary systems.
I think we'll stick with the appropriation we have here. That might just be easier. Madam Chair and members of the committee, I think you all have heard us talking about historic Fort Snelling over the last several years, and it feels like it's been one step forward and two steps back. Our project goals remain the same. We need to improve visitor services. We have a modern building that's failing, and it's a matter of time before we won't be able to have visitors in that leaky underground building. It's usable now, but at some point, we don't know how long it won't be. So we need to figure out a way to serve our visitors their basic restroom needs as well as interpretive program needs. And then the other major goal of our work at Fort Snelling is to preserve nationally significant historic building. The fort is a national historic landmark, which is the highest designation that the U.S. Department of the Interior gives to historic structures. So it's very important for us to preserve these buildings. I would make a distinction, just to remind you, between the upper post and the historic fort, which is also known as the lower post. Many of you are familiar with the visits you may have made with school groups and whatnot to the historic fort. There's some very important work happening at the upper post, officers' row, and the other barracks buildings. Those are not owned or controlled by the Minnesota Historical Society, but they're very important structures to maintain and preserve as well. But our focus is on the historic fort.
And to that point, by the way, you may have seen in the newspaper that I believe Hennepin County is going to use some of their federal stimulus dollars to work on two of those buildings.
Madam Chair, I did see that in the paper, and I think that's a great move forward if that's able to happen. As you know, 2 years ago we came in with a proposal for a new building for a visitor center, and due to a number of factors that did not happen, and we went literally back to the drawing board to figure out if we could reuse some of the buildings that are on site. We did determine in a previous planning exercise that the cavalry barracks in the middle of the site really would be too expensive to use for a visitor center. We're looking at the small building that's shown to the left of the cavalry barracks for a possibility, but we're not quite done yet, so we'll keep working on that project, and in 2 years or future years we'll be back with some kind of a request for that. But in the meantime, we will continue to preserve the historic structures in the historic fort.
At some point last year, there was some thought that you might move inside the historic fort for a visitor center. Has that been discarded?
Madam Chair, we will be doing some of the functions inside the historic fort as part of the appropriation that you made last year, including classrooms in the long barracks buildings in the historic fort, which are the ones towards the end by the round tower. On the other end of the fort. And we're doing upgraded restrooms and things like that as a sort of a temporary measure to serve our visitors better. But that's not a longer-term solution for the interpretive programs that the fort really deserves. The other appropriation that you've made regularly since 1994 is county and local historic preservation grants. We've made nearly 200 grants for just under $6 million since that time. There's a local match required. Those are small grants, but they often will make the difference in a community's efforts to do a historic preservation project the right way. They'll go for libraries, city halls, courthouses, things like that, and those have made a big difference on the local level. And those are for historic buildings. We've prioritized putting those dollars into buildings that are on the National Register that need assistance. Madam Chair, turning to the future, if there is a capital budget bill this year, if the criteria is projects that are shovel-ready, we would offer for your consideration four projects that are ready to roll that you would see in a future list, but these are projects that are ready to go. I think when you were touring the Hill House last year, you saw the Walnut Street wall. That's between the Hill House and the neighboring house with the steps that lead down towards Interstate 35E. That needed some shoring up and tuck pointing. Out at Fort Snelling, we have ongoing needs for window repair and masonry repairs. And we have, across the historic site system, we have needs to repair roofs. And I've talked about some of the other roofs, such as the Hill House, and these are sometimes a little bit more complicated if they have special materials. And I brought a couple of samples of roofs that we do. They're not the Home Depot kinds of roofs. This is a sample of slate from Fort Snelling. This fell off the building, Building 17, and I found this in a snowbank when we had a group out there last year. So kind of unusual materials. And then this was found on the ground, cedar shingle, which is common for the era of the 19th century, but a little more complicated and expensive to do. So we have a series of roof projects around the state at a half dozen or so of our historic sites. And then finally, this is not exactly shovel-ready, but if you are able to provide funding for design for future asset preservation projects, to the extent that we can have design completed before 2010, we will be able to complete those projects more quickly when they reach the top of the list in 2010 or a subsequent date.
And the to-be-determined one, is that literally not even a ballpark figure? That's more likely a next year thing?
Madam Chair, I think that we are getting the numbers tomorrow on that, and that one, I'm sorry, I skipped that one over. In the History Center, we have a room that houses our network, our server network equipment, and as you know, your computers generate heat, and the equipment, the cooling equipment in that room is failing. So we need to make sure that we don't cook our computer equipment. And like I said, we're getting our cost estimate on that tomorrow. And that's on the order of likely a couple $100,000.
Representative Anderson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Mr. Kelleher, the design for future asset preservation projects, could you give us an example or a couple of the things that you're thinking about there?
Mr. Chair, Representative Anderson, the last slide on the presentation is what our anticipated request would be for asset preservation for 2010 on the back side of this packet in the, sorry, very small print, but these are examples of things that are just the needs that come up at historic sites. The Hill House, I mentioned a couple of minutes ago, masonry repair, rehab of the carriage barn at the Ramsey House, those kinds of things. So they're things that we know are out there. They're on our list, but if we can do the design work, we'll be able to tackle those projects more quickly.
So that for the 2010, you're saying those are the three at the top are the categories, or they are the only major requests?
Madam Chair, this list on the slide are what we anticipate will be our requests: the asset preservation, the Kelly Farm, and the county and local historic preservation grants. I would say that we will be submitting our list to the Department of Finance and the Governor in June, and you will get a copy of that, and we will proceed from there. But at this point, on February 27th or whatever, 26th, that's what we would anticipate. We would have.
That'll make touring pretty easy this year.
Madam Chair, here's a list of interesting places that you can visit.
I'm sorry, Representative Anderson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Well, Mr. Kelleher, in your that last slide on your PowerPoint presentation, it reiterates again what you just have on the third to the last of the future asset preservation design. And so I'm confused.
Madam Chair, Representative Anderson, the ones that are on the 2009 list are projects that we would describe as shovel-ready. They are ready to go right now. And if you do have a capital budget bill in 2009, those would be ready to go this year. The rest of the list would not be ready to go this year, but would need further design work before we could do those.
Okay. Thank you.
Representative Jean.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Mr. Keller, my question is similar to Representative Anderson's. With the, and this slide kind of brings it out, what the asset preservation is going forward into 10. Is there any reason that these projects could not be fast-tracked and included in a 9 request if that were to be to make sense? For example, masonry repair, HVAC replacement, window replacement. Couldn't the design and, in fact, the construction happen in a matter of weeks or months to ramp that up if we wanted that to happen?
Mr. Kelleher?
Madam Chair, Representative Dean, our staff has determined that if, again, if the criteria is shovel ready, ready to go soon with the workload that that department has this year, that those would be the projects on the previous list. Those would be the projects that we would be able to complete really, really quickly. If you factor in the design timelines with bidding and all that, the balance of the projects probably could be completed quickly. It becomes a workload issue, but there is a longer time when you add design in. Some of the HVAC projects, you would think, well, just put a new furnace in, but they require design if there's ductwork in a historic house. For example, the Ramsey House recently had the HVAC system replaced, and that got really complicated to make sure that the ductwork didn't damage the house.
Do you have a what is the status of your accessibility project from the site? Do you have accessibility work that is laid out, ready to go from your ADA accessibility work plan? Is there work that we can or should be doing in that area that could be done quickly?
I'm going to look for some help. I don't know the answer to that question right off the top of my head. And
we'll invite anyone forward who looks like someone's got an answer. Welcome to the committee. Please identify yourself for the record.
Madam Chair, I'm Natasha Wiener. I'm the Historic Properties Manager for the Historic Sites Department, managing most of the bond money that we receive. For representatives for the ADA projects right now, currently with the Harkin Store money that we got and part of the 06 bond money, we're creating more accessibility to the house with a lift. A lot of projects were done right when ADA was passed, 12 years ago, and currently we have plans for potentially looking at increased accessibility at Split Rock. It's a very difficult place to create accessibility. We've created accessibility at most of our sites. We do have that we're always keeping an eye on ones that we can, but right now we're working on the Harkin Store. We just increased accessibility also at the Kelly Farm and the farmhouse.
The Harkin Store, the one that has the stairs all the way from the road up to the...
And right now...
One long stairway.
Yeah, right now we're creating a route so that you will be able to drive up to the house and then drop someone off, and then there'll be a lift that they can go up into the store at that point.
Mm-hmm. Representative Dean, did you have a follow-up? Representative Mullery.
Oh, Madam Chair. Mr. Keller, I was just wondering about the is that Grand Rapids, the logging camp, or is that the one there? Doesn't Landon put money in for that or something?
Madam Chair, Representative Mullery, you're referring to the Forest History Center in Grand Rapids. Landon Foundation has been very generous for operating programs over the years. I'm not sure that they do capital grants for projects like these, but we are aggressive in looking for whatever other sources of funding we can find beyond the state appropriations. I don't know that they do capital grants for state-owned facilities. We've not been able to shake that loose from them.
Follow-up?
Certain...
Representative Leader has something to say.
He wants me to ask him. he thinks there's one in Park Rapids. Is there one in Park Rapids for Representative Leader?
Madam Chair, I'm not sure which facility you'd be talking about.
Madam Chair, we'll get to Grand Rapids and get to the Forest District Center.
Okay.
But Madam Chair,
did you Really, did you want to follow up on that?
Oh, Madam Chair, this wasn't my question.
Okay.
But I was just going to say that I had heard that Blandon had some money for capital.
Madam Chair, they did do some capital things with their money for environmental learning centers throughout the state, and it was a matching fund from the capital investment as well. But their programs, like every other foundation, is also suffering because of the stock market and their income. So the amount of money that they're having available to give out is somewhat less, like considerably less.
Representative Murphy, yes.
I have a question about this slide.
Okay.
County and local historic preservation grants. Do you fund like museums under that if the museum is an old building?
Madam Chair, Representative Murphy, if the museum is housed in a historic structure that is publicly owned because they're bond dollars and on the National Register of Historic Places, yes, we could, if they meet those criteria. A lot of museums are in modern buildings, so they wouldn't qualify. Or if the museum building is owned by a 501c3 nonprofit, they would not qualify because it's not publicly owned by a city or county. And that's where a lot of local historical organizations have, fallen through the cracks because they're 501c3s and they're not eligible for bond dollars.
Follow up?
Okay.
I think we are completed then.
Thank you for the
any concluding comments.
Update you.
Okay. Thank you. Last presentation, Minnesota Zoo.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, I'm Peggy Adelman, Chief Financial Officer of the Minnesota Zoo, and I wanted to acknowledge the Historical Society. As you know, those of us who attend these meetings and sit through the hearings develop a camaraderie, and in the interest of time and not switching computers out, I spoke with Mr. Kelleher yesterday, and I sent my PowerPoint to him, and we can...
Wonderful.
Also, for the Historical Society, this summer in July, the zoo is opening a privately funded new woodland adventure playground, and as part of that, there will be a little miniature Split Rock Lighthouse in better repair than the one that we have on the north.
And members, to give you a taste of tours in the summer and fall, we worked this committee pretty hard. There were fairly long days and not many breaks. And as luck would have it, when we got to Split Rock Lighthouse, it was the only day we were a half an hour ahead. And all I had to say is, you have a half hour before we start. And everyone on the committee scattered like children at recess. And it was an absolutely wonderful half hour of a break in the most beautiful of locations. Welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I thought I would first go over what your previous investment has done. This past summer, we opened Rubber Grizzly Coast and a refurbished Central Plaza. This is what the Central Plaza looked like prior to the investment, and this was under our master plan category. You may notice that the asphalt is cracked, and there were a number of opportunities for people to trip, along with just being quite bland. This is what the Central Plaza looks like now. This is kind of the same area that you were looking down. There's a little right off the lake amphitheater where we can have small bands. We have a lot of school bands that come in May and play during the lunch hour. We can also hold wedding ceremonies there. And then in what used to be a sand pit, we now have a water feature where in the lower right-hand corner, the water pops up and down randomly. The white birch trees water will squirt out, and this has become extremely popular on those warm summer days. The Central Plaza, one of the reasons that the Central Plaza was part of that master plan is because it leads right into the major new renovation that you funded, which is Russet Grizzly Coast. And this is the entry into what is really an immersive exhibit. And the goal was to take people out of Minnesota, but along the same parallel on the far eastern coast of Russia. And so as you enter, the first animals are the sea otters, but you also can get a view of the grizzly bears. And you'll see in the picture on the left, we have what we call Bear Rock, and one of the grizzlies is exactly where you would have wanted him for picture purposes. In the foreground are the sea otters. As you walk along, you're entering into the Kamchatka Peninsula area where they have steam coming. There are bubbling mud pots, and all of these are interpreted, which bring you to a lava tube, which is where our grizzly bears are. This has been a phenomenal exhibit, and if you have not had an opportunity to come out and see it, I invite you to come anytime. Bears do not hibernate in the winter. If you feed them, then they're not quite as active. But they still get out there. On the really cold days, they kind of stand at the edge of the pool and decide whether or not to go in. We have trout that we put into this pool, and the bears have become fairly adept at fishing. And these are all, we hide food. One of the things that zoos do is to try and keep animals from being bored, and so they have to come out and search for their food in the morning. As I said, they do fish. One bear in particular has become quite adept by kind of catching the fish out of the corner of his eye and kicking it with his foot to stun it and then grabbing it. The stay time at the exhibit has been phenomenal. Then as you move on, one of the things that we know we need to do is provide those places for parents and grandparents and aunts and uncles to sit down and rest. And there's a mammoth dig where we have old bones of a woolly mammoth that the kids can dig around in the sand while the parents take a break. Then going into the southern forested region of the area, we have a family of wild boar. And then the last animal in the exhibit is Amur leopard. And there are only 30 Amur leopard left in the wild, and we are set up to breed. Right behind where the bear exhibit is, we have our first truly green building that we're going for LEED certification. We call this the Event Education Center. It has a green roof, which you can see up in the right upper right-hand corner, heated geothermal, recycled materials, and the zoo now finally has a facility that we can rent out during the day for business meetings. We can also use it for education when we have older kids that are there for learning. We do a lot of teacher training in this area. All of the other areas that we rent out at the zoo are public areas, and so we can only rent those out in the evening. And then I thought I'd give you a little behind the scenes. This is the bear holding area for Russet Grizzly Coast. And this is where we bring the animals in at night. It's particularly important with carnivores. In case there's a storm and a tree falls, you don't want that bridge out of the exhibit area. So we do bring them in at night. It's also an area where the keepers can get closer. We train them along with enrichment so that they can, for example, show their paw, show their teeth, and keepers can get in and actually do an exam every day to see if they need to go see the vet. The impact of your investment. We had the highest attendance in 9 years, and one of the really incredible numbers, the peak season really runs Memorial Day through Labor Day. And this past summer, our attendance was 43% above the previous year. And the previous year was actually a good year because that's when we had opened the refurbished Minnesota Trail. Peak season revenues were 70% above the previous year. Our membership levels reached an all-time high of 36,500, and they are on their way this year to reaching 40,000. One of the interesting things that we did receive an award on the Minnesota Trail, which I'll talk about in a moment, from the American Zoo and Aquarium Association, but we were also named Top Twin Cities Tourist Destination in 2008 by Minneapolis. And we think it's pretty cool that south of the river got named Top Tourist Attraction by Minneapolis. There's been a lot of media attention, and the whole guest experience has just been transformed. One of the things that we told you several years ago was that if the state would invest, that would generate private fundraising. And this graph shows you that that actually has happened. In the past, the Zoo Foundation, which is a 501c3 that exists to raise money for the zoo, would bring in about $2 million a year. And in 2008, they are over $7 million, just under $8 million. And 2009 are looking at a $9 million. Now, this is not all cash in the door. Some of these are multiple year pledges. But
do those dollars go to both capital and operating, or only operating?
Madam Chair, both capital and operating. This is the bird's eye view of the zoo. It's a 485-acre site. It was opened in 1978. And this is what the Minnesota Trail used to look like. The general look of the zoo was that kind of concrete, solid 1970s look, but really not very natural or really giving you that feel of nature. So one of the things that we have slowly been doing is trying to soften some of that, and slowly, when we have to rehab an exhibit, actually improve that exhibit. The Minnesota Trail now has a Northwood seal. This is the trailhead. You used to not even be able to find it. It was in this dark little corner. And we worked with the Department of Natural Resources. We worked with U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service on messaging. We have volunteers stationed at the desk that you see there, and all those pamphlets behind are for other conservation organizations, DNR. At the end of the trail, there's a big map that says, you know, you saw the lynx and the puma here on the trail. If you'd like to try and see them in the wild, here's where all the state parks are, here's all where the WMAs are, the scientific and natural areas. And this is the rehab beaver exhibit. We were able to actually get rid of the glass that was hard to see through, and you can now see the beavers, and the whole experience has been transformed. And as I mentioned, we did win an award. But that said, there are still asset preservation needs. This is what you'll see on a lot of the buildings. We had a piece of the ceiling fall down in one of the classrooms the other day. And when we have these projects, we are able to keep Minnesotans employed. I went to the project manager for our asset preservation projects, and I went to the project manager for the Russia's Grizzly Coast and Central Plaza projects, and I said, where were the people from that we contracted with, that we subcontracted with? And this is not an all-encompassing list, but it's all over Minnesota. It's Green, Minnesota. It's Mankato. It's Austin. It's Buffalo, along with the kind of expanded metro area, Little Falls. One of the questions that I've asked is, well, you know, if you get this much money, how many, you know, jobs will you create? In the construction industry, I'm not sure that you're actually creating jobs nowadays so much as keeping people employed. And I think that this shows that there are Minnesotans who the state keeps employed by the capital bonding project.
Representative Mullery has a question.
Well, thank you, Madam Chairman. I just wondered if you're I wasn't sure of your exact entity status. Are you subject to the prevailing wage law here?
Madam Chair, Representative Mullery, yes, we are. So the status of those recent appropriations, the master plan appropriations, the first one was in 2005. That was the large one to do the bulk of the Ridgewood Coast exhibit $20.6 million. All of that has been either, most of it's been spent. There's a little bit that's still sitting in an encumbrance, zero balance.
And is that the same as this one?
No, Madam Chair.
And can we get a copy
of
this one?
In the 2006 master plan, which funded a little bit more of the Grizzly Coast and the Central Plaza, there's zero balance on that. Asset preservation, 2005, we received a $2 million appropriation. That has all been spent. 2006, we received $7.5 million appropriation. That has all been spent. The 2008 bonding bill, we received $2.5 million. We have spent $573,000 of that, encumbered another $90,000. The balance of that will be encumbered very shortly. There's probably about $900,000 that's going to be inflow and infiltration project, and those bids were due in, I believe, this week. And all of that money will be encumbered by the end of this fiscal year. As far as asset preservation needs, like everyone else, we have the long list, and we say that there's really the iceberg is a $30 million list. What I've provided is a $10 million list that equates to a bill that Representative Sterner introduced this year. This is how we would spend that $10 million, and we believe that we could actually get those projects at least bid out and encumbered over the course of the year. But of that $10 million, we believe that there is $5 million, and you do have copies of this, of what's being defined as shovel-ready. And they're not the exciting projects like the Bears and the Minnesota Trail. There's the roof replacements and the tuck pointing, the water quality, the fencing. We have, you can imagine, with 485 acres that we have. We have to do a perimeter fence around the entire zoo, and then there is a lot of secondary fencing. So that it's fencing, it's those types of things. But there's $5 million worth that we can get bid out this spring. So with that, happy to answer the question.
Representative Murphy.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I wanted to ask you today, but forgot. Until I see the town. How many major fundraisers do you have during the year?
Madam Chair and Representative Murphy, we have what we would consider one major fundraiser, which is the Beastly Ball. That will be April 25th, and you'll all have an invitation. It's a fun event. And that brings in, probably grosses about $500,000. There, for the past 3 years, our employees actually have suggested a motorcycle ride. And so we've tried that now for 3 years, and that brings in closer to $20,000. It seems that it rains every single year so far.
I thought one member of the audience really perked up about that point when you talked about that.
Madam Chair, I believe that member of the audience is a participant.
Representative Dean.
Just kind of same question with the historical site. Is there any way that that if you were to prioritize and move up some of your asset preservation, that you could look at those 10 numbers and try to get them into 9 numbers for this summer? I just talked to a tile contractor who said that he will work anywhere in the state, and he just went to Omaha to try to keep one of his employees and one other person busy. But I don't think we can underestimate how hungry both people in the design and the construction industry are in the state right now. So,
Madam Chair and Representative Jean, when I was told that one of the carpenters on one of the projects came from Marshall, Minnesota, that tells me that people now are willing to travel to speak to be employed in one of the projects. The $5 million is what we know we're ready to get out the door and can commit to. Out of the remaining $5 million, there is a piece of that the kinds of things we're talking about don't require a lot of design, but to say that it could happen this summer, I wouldn't want to commit to that.
And just one last thing. I just have to commend you on the bear exhibit. It's just absolutely awesome. If you haven't been there, it's just great. My daughter, who used to say, when I would take her to the Minnesota Zoo, she would always say, "Where is it? I can't see it. Where is it?" She's behind the tree. "Where is it? I can't see it." And she would always get frustrated when trying to find the different animals. And she ran up the bear exhibit and she goes, "I can see it. He's right here." So she thought it was awesome. It's just a great exhibit.
Thank you. Well, I'm motivated now. I haven't seen it yet, so. The photos were incredible. No further questions. I think we're finished. Representative Scalzi?
Yes, Ms. Chair. I would move the minutes from February 24th, 2009.
Any questions? All in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed? Minutes are approved. Next meeting. A word. You may recall that a couple of hospitals approached us last year for bonding. Makes me very nervous, and I do sense that maybe the Senate is a little friendlier to those than I am, and I worry any time you move into a competitive area like that. So we've been sort of poking around to see what other alternatives are out there, and what we've discovered is most other states have a health care facilities authority. And just given the fact that we know that is going to be an issue for this committee, we scheduled somebody to come in to just talk to us a little bit about how that capital issue is handled in some other states, so that at least we have some arguing points when those issues come up. So that's the next meeting. Meeting is adjourned.